This episode of the Productivityist podcast is brought to you by Gantt Pro. Gantt Pro is an interactive online project management tool for people who love planning with timelines and Gantt charts. You can learn more about Gantt Pro as you listen to this episode of the podcast. I'm going to talk more about it during the show, but if you want to get $50 off when you sign up for Gantt Pro, just use the coupon code TIMECRAFTING at checkout. But again, stick around. I've got more to say about Gantt Pro during this episode. Now, let's get on with the show. Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Vardy, and this week on the show, I am chatting with Bob Rosen. He is the founder and CEO of Healthy Companies and is a trusted global CEO advisor, organizational psychologist, keynote speaker, and New York Times bestselling author of 8 books, including the one I'm holding on to in my hot little hands right here, Conscious, The Power of Awareness in Business and Life. And we're going to be talking about living a conscious life today on the show. You know, it's one of those, you know, whenever I get books and people that want to be on the show, it's always interesting when I haven't really explored their work too much beforehand. Bob was one of those people, and as I dug into his work, I'm like, this is really, really cool. He's got the book Grounded out there as well. But when we talk about the idea of being conscious and being aware, you know that I'm a big believer in awareness as one of the kind of pillars of personal productivity. We get into all of that and so much more. There's a lot of ground to cover. So let's get to it. Here is my conversation with Bob Rosen here on the Productivityist Podcast. Enjoy. I'd like to welcome Bob Rosen to the Productivityist Podcast. Bob, thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Really, really, really great. I'm feeling really aware today. Go figure. It's better than saying I'm feeling conscious, because people are like, what? No, like, seriously. And it makes sense considering who I'm speaking with. You and Emma Kate Swan have crafted this book, Conscious, The Power of Awareness in Business and in Life. And that's one of the things when I speak about productivity and time management, I mean, I've got I'm looking across at my office here, and there's two little blocks that, you know how you can pick up those blocks that have sayings on them? They're like tiny little ones you put on your desk. Mm-hmm. So one says create and the other one says awareness. And I picked up the awareness one at the Ottawa airport, and it just stood out to me. And I said, well, the fact that it like just spoke to me means that I was feeling aware at the time that I looked at it. So I was aware of it. I picked it up. But that's the thing. I think that productivity and time management, you have to have that awareness there in order for you to be able to make the best use of it. And I know you touch on this kind of thing inside the book, but I want to talk initially about the crafting of this book and putting this book together. You did research, your company, Healthy Companies, did on conscious leaders. And I want to touch on that right out of the gate, because the term conscious leader, first off, I'd like you to expand upon that. And then secondly, what happened when you found these people and started to research what they did for this book?
Well, you have to go back about 30 years. I'm a psychologist and a businessman, and I've always been interested in the intersection of personal development, organizational development, and financial success. And one day I got a call from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and they were interested in some of my work on Healthy Companies. And they gave me a chunk of money, and I developed a not-for-profit called Healthy Companies Institute. And during the early years, I was very interested in how great companies could be healthy, that people could get what they want from work and companies could get what they want from people. And it became clear to me that organizations are healthy only when the leaders are healthy. And so I started a research program where I went out and interviewed CEOs. And since that time, I probably have sat face to face with maybe 600 CEOs of large global companies. Singapore Airlines, Toyota, Boeing, PepsiCo, Procter & Gamble. And the conscious message came out of those interviews and my coaching and our company's work in helping to develop great leadership programs and help companies transform over time. And so I began to notice that the very best leaders were a combination of self-aware and deeply committed to their own development. And what that enabled them to do is to see that generally leaders, they have four strategic agendas. The finance agenda, which is sort of making money and managing money. The marketplace agenda, which is typically creating products and services that are relevant that people want to buy. The operations agenda, which is figuring out how to make the product most effectively and efficiently. And then there's the human agenda, which are the values and the purpose and the leadership and the culture of the company. And these self-aware people realized that the human agenda was the leading indicator. It was the driver of the value chain. And if you didn't get that human agenda right, you couldn't build a great company. And so I started to see that they were exhibiting qualities, both grounded qualities, which was my last book, which was called Grounded, and conscious qualities, which is their ability to be aware. And the more conscious they were, the faster they could adapt to all the changes in the world and the higher performing they were. So this has been a research project for many, many years, noticing how the best leaders excel.
Now, you mentioned that, you know, the idea of when the people become conscious and that they kind of pull that into the ethos of their company and it becomes fabric of successful companies. You talked about how they were able to succeed faster. But to me, and I mean, I know you touch on this in the book and I'd like you to expand upon this. There is an element of actually taking time and slowing down to become conscious and aware, right? Which I think a lot of people, and you mentioned this right out of the gate, is that the world is so frenetic. I would imagine that when you're talking to these conscious leaders or when you're putting this book together, that there's a cadence or a pace about them. Is there a commonality that you see with people who are consciously aware?
Well, I think one of the dilemmas is that the world is changing faster than our ability to adapt. Mm. And that is creating a great challenge because most people in those situations with the pressures to perform and to get ahead and to meet deadlines and goals is to run faster. But I find that conscious people, more aware people, are those who recognize that they have to move forward in more intelligent ways. And that involves being aware of themselves, being aware of their relationships, and being aware of their surroundings or their environment. You know, we've had a great movement in the country paying attention to mindfulness. And mindfulness is being sort of present focused. But what conscious is putting that awareness into action. So how can you be aware of yourself, be aware of relationships, and be aware of your surroundings and the environment as you're moving fast? Because the world, everybody's grappling with the same six disruptors, the pace of speed and uncertainty, the fact that the world is much more complex with more choices than ever before. Technology is an uber disruptor for everybody, competition and globalization. So it's counterintuitive that you have to go inside in order to understand these outside forces, but that's exactly what's happening. And the very best leaders do that.
Now, I was going to get into the six disruptors because, you know, disruption is, you know, it's one of those things. And you actually mentioned that there's a line in the book that I really like, which is the path from clueless to conscious is paved with disruption. So, which is great. Alliteration always looks good. And actually, when I told you that when I was going through the book again with my daughter and I were waiting in the hospital, by the way, everyone, she's okay.
Good.
Is she liked that line. She goes, clueless to conscious. And but there's four reasons you mentioned also that like when you talk about change that we're not changing fast enough, which again is like this age of acceleration that you mentioned. Can we dive into those four reasons? Because the six disruptors you touched on, and I want people to be able to look into the book and figure out which one of those disruptors or maybe several of them in a combination thereof are affecting them and their ability to or their inability to become more self-aware and conscious. But what are these four reasons that people aren't changing fast enough? And then maybe how what they can do to kind of overcome those.
Well, it doesn't really matter, Mike, where I go, whether it's in the United States or outside the United States, whether it's in a large or small company, whether it's in a not-for-profit or government organization or a large for-profit global company, that their world is becoming disruptive. There's more change than I've seen in my lifetime, and there's a lot of pressure to move fast, as we just talked about. So the challenge is that we don't have the right mindset for this new world order. Mm-hmm. And we have to change the way we think about change and uncertainty. The problem is that some of us are simply too shallow in our thinking. We're unaware, we're superficial of what's going on around us, and some people actually are clueless. Others of us are too narrow in our perspective. We're too biased, too prejudiced, too closed-minded, and we're sort of stuck in steel bunkers with old assumptions and old mental and business models that just don't work anymore. Other people are too safe. They're too protective or too reactive in their actions, and they're unwilling to take risks and to step up. And others are too small, and they're either too cautious or too self-centered in a world that is highly connective and collaborative. And so they become too small in their impact. And all four of these pitfalls have tremendous impact on us as individuals, in organizations, and in our communities. I mean, just look what's happening in our communities, the amount of polarization and partisanship and cynicism and mistrust across socioeconomic levels and gender and race and ethnicity. And a lot of it is because many of us are simply not conscious enough. Mm-hmm. We're not aware of ourselves and each other. And that happens in business as it happens in life.
One of the other things you touch on in the book, which I really liked, was this idea of reflection. We tend to, get stuck in the doing of just what's coming at us, and we're not, reflective enough either A, in the moment, or B, looking back at prior moments to figure out if we should be doing things in the first place. Can we talk a bit about how important reflection is when it comes to awareness and consciousness?
Well, I think most of us grew up in a world that prioritized and reinforced action over introspection. So we're rewarded for doing things faster than other people. We're rewarded to getting to outcomes. We live in bullets and tasks. And so the society doesn't really reinforce reflection. But in fact, as the world moves faster, we have to reflect more. So we prevent ourselves from making stupid mistakes. And so these six disruptors are happening in the world. And at some point, we've got to take a breath and ask ourselves, is this the right thing to do? There's something about getting clear about our intentions and then letting our intentions translate into action, which is really important. It's the heart of being conscious. So this becomes really important. Now, here's the problem. We have an old definition of change. We've developed leaders in static organizations, and now we've come to realize that uncertainty is reality and stability is an illusion. Now, we periodically have to get off the train to take a breath, and we call that a vacation or a holiday or a mental health day or whatever. But what happens is that many of us haven't made the shift to recognize that uncertainty is reality. So what goes with uncertainty? Well, we have to, number one, get very comfortable with being imperfect and vulnerable by definition. Mm-hmm. Because in a world of uncertainty, when we breathe, we are by definition vulnerable. We don't have all the answers. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to fall down. And we have to get much more comfortable being uncomfortable. The second part of change is that many people see change as happening to them, a new technology, a new boss, a new company, a fight with a spouse, rather than seeing change as happening for me. And when we see changes happening for me, we can step back and say, there's a reason why this change is happening to me. I may not be able to understand it, but chances are something good will come out of it. And so we have to fundamentally change our whole relationship to change in order to be effective in a world that is disruptive and constantly changing.
We're going to take a break from the podcast to talk about our sponsor for this episode, Gantt Pro. Now, Gantt Pro started as a project of an outsourcing software development team. They've planned more than 500 projects for their clients, and they know how challenging project management can be. That's where Gantt Pro began. It combined their experience with feedback from early users to offer a solution that integrates essential project management tools with maximum ease of use. That's a killer combination. They've created their online Gantt chart software that lets everyone build comprehensive project plans in just a few minutes, effectively collaborate on projects with team members, and set accurate estimates and track the progress of reports. Now, when you use Gantt Pro, you can also easily share charts and clients and colleagues or export Gantt charts to include them in your presentations, report, and business plans. There's lots that Gantt Pro has to offer. It's got a simple UI, which I'm big on. Simple is so good. Simple with drag and drop efforts. It's just effortless. Create your first project in just 7 minutes. It's an onboarding process with a learning curve that is really, really short. And that's really important because there's so many apps and tools that are out there. So if you've got a learning curve that isn't so steep, it's super helpful. Now, it's a perfect value for the price as well. According to Capterra, which is an online resource that lists tons of project management software tools, Gantt Pro ranks among top 20 of the most affordable project management software applications out there. It's a great fit for both project managers and their teams. Project managers love simple planning and other great features like workload, tasks, assignment, deadlines, critical path, and baseline. And teams can use it for online cooperation to leave comments, attach files, send notifications, and track progress and statuses. I'm exploring Gantt charts a lot more these days, and I'm doing it with Gantt Pro, and so can you. Use the coupon code TIMECRAFTING at the checkout to get $50 off when you sign up with Gantt Pro today. So go to GantPro.com, that's GANTTPro.com, and use the promo code TIMECRAFTING at checkout to get $50 off when you sign up for Gantt Pro. I'd like to thank Gantt Pro for sponsoring this episode of the Productivityist Podcast. Now let's get back to the show. The idea of bias that you talked about a little bit earlier, and cognitive bias is a huge thing. I come across it in my work. You know, people don't feel they have control over their time. You present them with interesting strategies and they say, well, there's no way I can do that. But then you actually kind of break it down a bit. And I think that's the other thing too, is people don't break things down to their smallest increment. They don't try to see it at its base levels. They'll think of, you know, I can't write this book because look, it says write this book, as opposed to what if I wrote 500 words a day, eventually I would have a book. Again, that idea of, action over introspection. You talk about the idea, like action is, you mentioned this, this is a quote right from the book, action is often the path of least resistance. How do you get people, especially when they're reading, like people are listening to this right now and they're saying, yeah, that's all well and good, but I don't have time to think about this. The world is moving so quickly. How do you help people? And how does this book help people get past those cognitive biases or those other, there's so many of them, to be able to break through and make the ability for themselves to be more conscious and be more aware?
Well, I love the story of Paul Simon, the singer. In 1984, he was like at a low point in his career, and he went exploring around the world, and he went to Africa. And he was introduced to the sound of African music, and he brought that forward to the rest of the world in Graceland. And he was an early adopter of cultural inclusion, for example, as a path to innovation. And he recognized that we can get very stuck in some old ways of thinking, and that is a big problem in the world today. I think another problem is that when we go online 24/7, what we recognize is that the technology reinforces our biases. So the technology gives us advertisements that we want, gives us books that we want. And so it reinforces how we see the world. So we almost have to be conscious about trying to get diverse perspectives into our life. That's the case with unconscious bias. And there's a lot written about this, but I think a lot of us bring, you know, here's an interesting statistic that 90, I think it's about 90% of what goes on in our head is unconscious. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about moving from unconscious to conscious. We're talking about moving from less conscious to more conscious. And if we could increase the level of consciousness in our minds by 1 to 2 percentage points, we would be a lot more effective. In the book is primarily organized into 4 practices. And the first practice is to go deep. And I can talk about each one of them, but go deep is really a practice of being more aware and more introspective. One of the great examples of people who have gone deep is Oprah Winfrey. We've watched as she has lived her exploration to develop her open mind and open heart and to be more authentic in the world today on the public stage. And she basically would say, if I only knew how important it was to go deep and be authentic, and how much money I could make by sharing that on the public stage, I would have done it a lot earlier in my career. So one of the things that she teaches us about going deep is that you got to really look in the mirror and ask yourself, who is that person in the mirror? Because many of us look in the mirror and we see smudges in the mirror that involve unclear perceptions of ourselves or other people. We frequently have biases and assumptions that don't work anymore. We come to our relationships and our own lives with fear-based emotions that just undermine and hijack us. And also, we're unproductive sometimes in the way we interact with people. So getting clear about who is that person that you're looking in the mirror is very, very important. The second part of going deep is really, as I mentioned, to get comfortable being uncomfortable. But, you know, we're not really taught in life to be uncomfortable. We're basically taught to run away from any discomfort and anxiety. So I wrote a book a couple years ago called Just Enough Anxiety. And I said that, you know, anxiety is a fact of life, but how we treat it and how we use it really matters. Mm-hmm. And if you have too little anxiety, it's the face of complacency, and too much, and it's a face of freneticism and chaos, but just the right amount of anxiety. So we got to give ourselves more permission to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And then lastly is we've got to leverage our positive emotions. You know, we live with fear-based emotions, which are like sadness and anger and fear and anxiety. And then we're hardwired as well for love and faith and compassion and hope and optimism and generosity. And the really most successful people allow themselves to experience the full range of those emotions. It's not that we don't experience negative emotions or fear-based emotions. We just don't stay over there very long. So we experience them, we express it respectfully and appropriately, but then we want to move into our positive emotions quickly. So that really is the first practice of being conscious, is to go deep.
So if people want to go deep, and this is something I love the idea of you know, digging deep into yourself, into your situation, your emotions, all that stuff. Where can people start? Is there a simple place where they can start? Because again, I think a lot of people would be, well, that just scares them to hear like, go deep. Oh, that sounds like it's going to take a long time, or I don't have time for that. Where can, like, is journaling a place to start? Is there, and I know you've got a couple of thoughts in the book. And I, again, the whole goal here is, spoiler alert, let's not give away the whole book because I mean, again, I've spent time with the book and I found myself nodding constantly. And this is a book too, as I sidetrack a bit, that you need to take time to read. And it's not something that you're just going to tear through once and leave alone. You're going to, especially if you look at the book itself, the spine of the book says conscious. It's the color is bright. It's going to stand out in your bookshelf. You might even want to pull it out a little bit so that it's like, if you catch yourself losing yourself, then you're like, okay, hold on a second. The messages will come back. But where can people start when it comes to going deep, that where they don't feel like they're either going to get so far gone that they can't get back to the things that they feel they need to be working on at that moment, and yet they get that 1% benefit that then can lead to 2 and can compound over time.
Right. Well, many of us see going deep as like a Pandora's box.
Right.
And if we really stop and take a breath, sometimes we're stressed out. Sometimes we're uncomfortable. Sometimes we're feeling anxious and no one wants to feel that. So there's a tendency to not want to go there. A couple things. First off is that meditation has been great for a lot of people. Doesn't have to be an hour or 20 minutes or 10 minutes. It could be just 5 minutes waking up and sitting on the side of your bed and just reflecting on your day and choosing that you want to live a positive day with a sense of gratitude. Taking a walk in the middle of the day at lunch, a half hour around the block and taking in the sights and just reflecting that way is another way to go deep. Going to the gym, I find that just putting in on my headphones and doing my elliptical, I can go deep just in reflection, just stopping the monkey brain, the worrying that goes on. See, one of the problems is that many of us live in the past. So we're constantly revisiting old stories and old mishaps and things that went wrong, and we worry that we're going to repeat them. Other people live in the future, so they're constantly thinking about what do they need to do, what do I need to anticipate, what am I worried about, rather than sort of living in the present and just allowing yourself to focus in, for example, Mike, on this conversation. Mm-hmm. I got plenty to do. I just came from a bunch of meetings. I'm going to a bunch of meetings. But right now, you and I are in a conversation, and I've got to focus myself. That's really about going deep. And there are lots of practices in the book. Well, what we try to do in the book is to give you some practical tips, give you some big ideas, and also give you lots of examples of people who have done it from all walks of life. Because conscious really is a deeply human approach to personal change. And it lays out these four powerful lessons to help you accelerate yourself and your organization.
Well, it's interesting because as I was going through the book, and preparing for, I had other interviews 2 weeks ago, and I'd already gone through the book. And one of the things I decided to do is I noticed that when I was taking notes while chatting with a person I was having on the show, is I was disengaging from the conversation. Not intentionally, it was just happening by, okay, let me make sure I get this, let me add that link, so on and so forth. And I felt, now maybe you, the listener, didn't feel this way, but I felt that the podcast was suffering as a result. The quality was right. And so what I did was I made a conscious choice to say, you know, from now on, when I'm sitting and having a conversation, I'm sitting in this more comfortable chair. It seems like I'm having coffee with you right now, Bob. I'm actually drinking my coffee and sitting and chatting. Great. But then what I'll do is I'll go back and listen to the conversation afterwards and make notes after the fact. Now, some people would say, well, Mike, that's not efficient, but to me, productivity isn't about being efficient for the sake and losing the sake of effectiveness in the process, right? It's about, okay, what makes sense? And in this situation, the extra half hour that I'm going to take to listen back to the show is going to pay off in spades. So there's a small example of where that can come into play. Now, before we go, Bob, you've talked about the book, and you've got a body of work too. This book is kind of like, is it the end? Is it the culmination, or is there more to come? Because, as you go through, and again, the introduction of the book kind of lays the groundwork. And I said, okay, so this is the final book in the series. But I'm sure going through this book, you became more, no pun intended, aware that there's places that you can go beyond this, right?
Well, it's a good question. I'll answer that in 1 second. I just want to lay out the other three practices.
Sure.
One is to think big. And this is really all about being curious and adaptive. And it involves sort of getting up on your own drone and looking at yourself and looking over the horizon. And really effective people are able to think in today and think in tomorrow. And that enables them to perform today and transform for the future. Another aspect of thinking big is to develop a Google mind, a mind that is constantly learning, like the search engine of Google. And they say that learning agility is probably the most important quality of all. And so how can you cultivate that mind? And then lastly is really developing a network, an ecosystem of relationships. And they enable us to continue to expand our horizons. And so thinking big is the second practice. Getting real is really about being authentic and intentional, what we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. And in the book, we lay out a set of accelerators, things that drive us forward, and hijackers that undermine us. And so it's really important to understand that. And then lastly is to step up, to be bold and responsible in your life. And we lay out four or five strategies for that. So let me come back to your question. It's a really good question. I've written 8 books, and the last two, I think, have really summarized my leadership, and I've sort of pulled the best of that thinking into the last two books. The one before Conscious was Grounded, and Grounded makes the point that we grow up in a leadership paradigm that says that what you do defines who you are. And the first thing we do when we go to a party is we say, oh, what do you do? What do you do? But in fact, it's much more important to start with who you are, and that who you are as a human being drives what you do and how you perform. So the very best leaders were grounded or rooted in 6 roots: their physical health, their emotional health, their intellectual health, their social health, their vocational health, and their spiritual health. And this provides a foundation. It enables you to stay grounded when all the winds of change are sort of rumbling above you. Conscious, the second book, the most recent book, helps you adapt in this constantly changing world. And we see that grounded and conscious are like 2 sides to the same coin.
Right.
So what we're doing now is we have developed 2- and 3-day workshops that we're taking inside 2 companies. And we offer them face-to-face in workshops with executives. And then we often train or certify in or people who are in human resources or in learning and training functions to actually facilitate the grounded and conscious workshops inside the business. And then we've deployed technology with the technology partners so we can bring these ideas into organizations. So I don't think I'm going to write another book for a while, and I'm going to sort of go out and try to scale these ideas and help people at all levels, because ultimately my dream is that we develop grounded and conscious workforces, because I think these are the qualities that will help you get ahead as you look into the future.
Well, now I've got to go read Grounded, because I've only got one side of the coin so far, but but no, that makes total sense though, because you know, and you know, I can think even though I've not. You haven't mentioned any of the leaders that are the people that are mentioned and grounded at this point. I can already can envision some of them just based on, you know, kind of where they've gone with their businesses and their lives based on who they are and what led them to what they do. So, yeah, that's maybe I got to have you back on the show to talk about that at some point.
Well, it's interesting because there are thousands and thousands of books in each of those 6 areas: physical, emotional, and lots of thought leaders and experts in those areas. But we don't show up in silos when we come to work or come into our families. We show up as integrated, holistic people. And so we show up with our physical, emotional, intellectual, spiritual selves to work. And so Grounded is really like an integrated leadership system that it really talks to the individual about who they are. And it's amazing when you put those roots in front of people, people just love to talk about their humanity. And I think organizations are crying out for these kinds of conversations because the work is getting harder and harder, and the burnout is getting greater and greater. And so we need to create a kind of a valve to let people talk more openly about the human side of life in business.
Bob, this has been great. And I highly encourage everyone to pick up this new book from Bob and Emma Kate Swan, who is also Emma co-authored this with you, obviously.
Oh, yeah. And she's in the other room, and she's working on a couple of the workshop designs that we're doing in the next couple of weeks. And she's been wonderful to work with, Australian, and brings a unique perspective and has done a lot of work globally. And it's a treat to work with. It's great to be. Yesterday, we gave a speech to the Chief Learning Officer Conference, and It was great keynoting it with a woman next to me, and we could talk about these things. We talked about gender differences, and it was really fun.
Awesome. Awesome. The book is called Conscious, The Power of Awareness in Business and Life, and also linked to Grounded as well. Because like you said, I think that these are two books that together will give you a real real good, like you said, it's the two sides of the same coin, help you function in a world or in an age of acceleration, in a world that's definitely deep in that era. And Bob, thanks so much for taking the time today. Where else can people find your work online?
They can go directly to healthycompanies.com.
Thanks for joining me today, Bob.
You bet. My pleasure.
And there you go. That's how the podcast went down. Big thanks to Bob Rosen for joining me on the show. You can pick up Conscious, The Power of Awareness in Business and Life, anywhere that fine books are sold, Amazon, all that fun stuff. But yeah, again, just a great conversation. Honestly, one of the ones that I really like when I listened back to it, because we recorded this interview months ago, I was like, wow, you know, we had a really, really fun time chatting. And there's a lot of ground we covered. We can cover even more. I'm sure that Bob and I can definitely talk more and more about this in the future. Maybe we'll have him on the show again. If you like this episode, you want to see Bob on the show again, a rating and review of the podcast will definitely help with that. So again, whether you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever, leaving a rating and review not only helps John Polster, my producer, and I make the show better, but it also helps people discover the podcast, which is super important for listenership. And just, you know, we can help more people with the productivity insights and ideas and all that stuff that we share on this show. So again, leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to the show. And if you don't want to miss a single episode, we've got lots of great episodes coming up, then make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you are listening to your podcast right now. Big thanks to Connie for putting the show notes together. Big thanks to my producer, as always, John Polster, for keeping me honest and moving forward and conscious about making sure this podcast is coming to life each and every week. And thanks to you for listening. And big thanks to our sponsor, Gantt Pro, who sponsored this episode of the show. Again, I encourage you to check out Gantt Pro. I'm looking into Gantt charts a lot more these days, and Gantt Pro is how I'm doing it. Use the coupon code TIMECRAFTING at checkout when you go to GantPro.com. That's GANTTPro.com. And again, that coupon code is TIMECRAFTING. When you check out, you'll get $50 off when you sign up for Gantt Pro. So again, big thanks to Gantt Pro for sponsoring this episode of the Productivityist Podcast. Until next time, I am Mike Vardy, the host of the Productivityist Podcast, reminding you to stop guessing and start going.